The one thing that must be clear to us, and God willing, we'll have more to say about freedom and human rights and what I call the lens of liberty. What should be clear to us is that we may not accept the compartmentalization of our thinking promoted by our present intellectual fashion. But what I mean by that is we cannot think of a human being as one thing when we're in church or when we're thinking in terms of our faith, and then think a completely different thing about humanity when we're involved in business or social affairs or political activities. There has to be that integrity, that oneness. And it's not easy, believe me. I'm not suggesting that anything that we're talking about is easy, but it's a striving. And this is indeed, as Metropolitan Vlachos has said in many of his works, what the practice of Orthodox faith is about. It is not, as our Protestant brothers and sisters might say, a series of propositions that you agree to or disagree with, but rather it is a way of life. It is a worship of God, which is therapeutic to our fallenness. It is the path which leads to the reintegration, just as we saw earlier when we talked about Father George Calcia's conception of fasting, or I should say his perception of fasting, as a removal of fear from the world. Likewise, our worship of God in Orthodox fashion is for the healing of the nations, beginning with ourselves. So, what's known as spiritual anthropology, or the Orthodox understanding of human beings, human nature, human persons, must consistently be the basis, we must strive for this at least, of all of our thinking, at all times and in all circumstances, unless we be, guilty of being intellectually dishonest and perhaps morally inconsistent. All right, so what does the Orthodox faith teach about freedom, power, authority? The Orthodox Christian meaning of freedom. There are so many places in Scripture. I could just read the Bible to you. I have my greatest hits. I'll just read a couple to start. The Lord said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. I am the way, the truth, and the life." So, we already talked about that. If Jesus Christ is the Logos of God, and he is, then when he says, "I am the way, the truth, and the life," that's true. And when he says, "You will know the truth, and the truth shall make you free," then we're talking about a personal promise, really, which is fulfillable. Saint Theophan the Rector says, God does not command the impossible. If you can't do it, he can. St. Paul to the Galatians. "Stand fast, therefore, in the liberty wherewith Christ has made us free, and be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage." And our dear friend Father Philip McCaffrey says, "Death to tyrants!" But that's that's Father Philip. Sorry. Okay. The axial story of the Bible, by which I mean the central or primary story upon which all other stories hang, is a three-part story, a trilogy, if you like to call it that, of how a people born in freedom and destined to live in freedom, meant for freedom, fell into slavery, and how before the end they came to recover their freedom. So you might say there are three movements to this opera. Now, given the title of our retreat this weekend, Orthodoxy and American Citizenship, you might suppose I'm talking about the American people. Or since I'm reading and quoting from the Bible right now, you might think I'm talking about the people of Israel. And neither answer is incorrect, it's just not fully correct. Because the people I'm talking about, of course, is the entire human race. I'm not talking about one ethnicity, one race, one religious group. I'm talking about the whole human race, without ethnic, religious, or racial divisions or distinctions. This is our story. It is everyone's story. It is the human story. It's the story of the human race. This meta story, as the literary people like to call it, is the framework on which hang all the other stories contained in the Holy Scriptures. These other stories are stories within this story and are meant to illustrate it or to unfold its meaning for our edification. And I'll give you one example that's somewhat obviously connected to our theme. Everyone is familiar with the story of Moses and the bringing out of the children of Israel from slavery in Egypt. But perhaps not everyone, and maybe you are exceptions, but certainly not many of our friends and neighbors, are familiar with what might be called the going down into Egypt, namely the story of Joseph of the many-colored coat, who was the favored son of Jacob and the scourge of his brothers.
Cast into the well.
The sons of Jacob, who is Israel, sold their brother Joseph into slavery many years before they brought their families down to Egypt to live. He was no doubt an insufferable prig when he was young. He was younger brother than all of them, with the exception of Benjamin.
You might want to be sure that there's a G on the end of that.
He did.
Yeah, but I don't know if everybody heard it. I saw a few cringes.
Okay.
P-R-I-G?
Yes.
Just say it.
Oh, I get it.
Not everybody...
Not everybody
knows that word.
Okay.
You have to read English literature.
That's right. I'm sorry. Somebody once told me, I love your sermons, I have to go home and look up things in the dictionary. I apologize for that. He was insufferable.
Right.
He's still a prick.
When he was young. And like I said, I'm sure you all know the story. And they sold him into slavery to assuage their own jealousy and envy. He probably was maybe quicker in intelligence than many of them. He certainly was the apple of his father's eye, which no doubt caused great jealousy among them. And then to top it off, he gets this coat. So actually, you know, selling him into slavery was vastly superior to what some of them wanted to do, which was to kill him. And in fact, they threw him in a pit. You know the story. I shouldn't tell you all this. They threw him in a pit until they could kind of argue it out among themselves, you know, those that wanted to kill him and those that said, oh, we can't do that, you know, daddy will die, you know. But anyway, they escaped the sin of Cain, which is killing their brother. But what this story shows us is that the children of Israel fell into slavery in Egypt not merely because of the oppression, jealousy, and fear of the Egyptians, but because they exercised their freedom in the pursuit of evil. As you said, there are consequences, you know, but you want to make up. It's like my sister said once, my oldest sister, when she was barely 16, she might even just have had a learner's permit, took this Jeep. It was actually what's known as a Jeepster, for those of you that are old like me. To a slumber party at one of her friends. And early the next morning, they all went for a little ride in the country. And this is Oklahoma, and so the roads are dirt, and Hilly and Sandy, and they rolled it over. Thank God nobody was hurt beyond, I think, a cut thumb or something. But it became a byword in the family. You know, you have to learn from your sister's mistake or whatever. The second sister said, I want to wreck my own Jeeps. So there it is. I'm going to wreck my own Jeep. Sorry.